BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
But if you're Michigan football and you're going to send Connor Stallions out scouting or have him be on the sidelines with the team, would you just put him in disguise or would you just find a different person to go to a bunch of different games? I don't know. Michigan fans are going to defend Michigan football because that's what Michigan fans are doing. That's what all fans do. This is where Oregon fans are doing the same damn thing. Washington fans, same. USC, same. That's what fans do. Oregon State fans, same. You're all blind, okay? Just accept it. What causes that blindness? You're myopic. People say, oh, you have the rose-colored glasses on. Nope. You've got a walking stick. And you are feeling around for a way out of the room. What causes that? Steven, what causes that? What causes people to be, like, blind to their program's issues? Couldn't happen at my program. They wouldn't cheat.
Never would they cheat. I don't know, because it happens all the time where that school or that program will eventually get caught doing something. And so, I don't know. It's just, that's just what fandom is, I guess. It's just the blind love, no matter what it is. But we have that in people, though, too. Like, people have relationships where they just can't get out of it because they're so blinded by that person that are obsessed with them. It's just, you know, I think with at least in sports, there's more of a healthy obsession with it than most. Like, I think.
Is it, though?
But there's some crazy people, yes. But I think for the most part, like, even if, you know, me as a Blazers fan, I can admit the Blazers' mistakes. But if I was someone that could never admit the Blazers' mistakes, like, I still feel like it's a little more healthy for the most part, right?
Maybe. I have people who will say to me, you're so critical of the Blazers. And I'm like, they've won 81 games in the last three seasons.
How can you not be?
What do you want me to do? You want me to spin that into a...
I tell you what,
great.
I can try. I've tried during the draft because, you know what, the cleaning pick, I liked it, but that's about it. That's about all I can spin right now.
Let's spin it. Blazers, you know, hey, they're rooted here. They're in a transition. They're rebuilding. I love all the young assets they have. Love Donovan Clingan. He's a steal where they got him in the draft. Had to move away from the Damian Lillard era, and it's hard. It hamstrings every team that moves out of an era.
Chauncey Billups, he's actually a good coach, John. He was brought in to coach Damian Lillard in a team that contends, so he's still getting used to, you know, rebuilding. Yeah, so at some point, he'll figure that out once the team starts to be better.
When the team is better, the coach will be better. The food will be better. The parking spots will seem like they're wider. Everything will be better when the team's better.
Scoot just signed with Clutch Sports, you know. They only signed good players.
That means free agents are coming.
Yeah. LeBron. Bronny.
You're going to have to pick and choose between which all-star you want to have on your team.
They're going to be flocking to Portland, Oregon. They never have before, but now they will.
I can do that. But it's not quite that. It's more when you're a fan of a team and you get accused of doing something wrong and... If it were happening to another team, you would plainly see it. If Connor Stallions had been Ohio State's guy, the Michigan fans would see this differently. I know that, okay? And guess what? The Ohio State fans would be the ones we're talking about.
Well, wasn't that the whole thing with Willie Lyles in Oregon?
Yeah. Couldn't have been Chip.
No.
And then it was, and people were like, okay, yeah, they were using a scouting service. They were painting outside the lines. You know, I'll even go back to, like, I'm going to bring it up, and Oregon State fans are going to get mad at me, but Luke Heimlich, okay? Luke Heimlich. Oregon State fans defended him because they know him, and they said, hey, this is a guy who had a terrible thing that he participated in when he was a juvenile, followed him into his adult life. Nobody would have known about it had he just registered as a sex offender at Oregon State. And, you know, they'll say, oh, this was a bad family dispute gone awry. Meanwhile, everybody else is going, no, no registered sex offender on my team. And guess what? If that had happened at Oregon, it would have been Oregon State fans going, no, you can't do that. Look at you guys. You've lost your minds. You've lost your way. That's how it happens. It's your perspective. So try to keep a healthy perspective. Don't turn into a Michigan fan. And Michigan fans, ask yourself, if you're out there listening, and I know some Michigan fans listen to the show, because I hear from them. If you're out there listening, ask yourself how you'd feel about this whole thing if it happened at Ohio State. Just saying. That brings us to Punch It Audio. We got great stuff today.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Caleb Williams, number one overall pick in the NFL draft. He goes to the Chicago Bears. They have talent. Mark Sanchez says, Caleb Williams, it's going to run this thing. Punch it.
You got to realize this is like the Gen Z first NIL, you know, paint the fingernails kind of kid. It's just a different thing that we're seeing. And he's about to potentially take over the NFL. And I think he's set up for success. I can't fault Ryan Poles. You know, you got to give him his due because he's at least put him in a solid position with three outstanding receivers and drafting Rome Odunze early in the first round. You know, they already have DJ Moore, who accounted for like 40%+ of their offense, only second to Tyreek Hill in the NFL of offensive percentage, which is unbelievable. And then you got a guy like Keenan Allen to help a guy like Rome Odunze, a rookie. You never get that kind of stuff. And when you do, those guys can really take advantage of it. And that can accelerate his learning curve and help him mature quickly, which is what Caleb's going to need.
Every year we watch multiple quarterbacks drafted in the first round. And we say that after three or four seasons, the success rate of those quarterbacks sticking with their teams is less than 50%. I think Caleb Williams will stick. I think Bo Nix is going to stick. I don't know about the rest in the first round. J.J. McCarthy, I didn't like it. Jaden Daniels, I didn't like the pick. I didn't like where he was. Even Michael Penix Jr., it's not ideal. It's just not ideal.
But we talked about this, too. Like, isn't it, Caleb Williams, yes, the Bears have had a bad history of quarterbacks, but he was put in such a good spot with all the additions that they made. As Mark Sanchez said, you know, they had DJ Moore, but they go on, they get Keenan Allen, draft Rome Odunze. Like, they are putting weapons around him where the Bears have never done that in the past. And then you look at, you know, the Commanders or the Broncos, and I think it's going to be tough. Like, they don't have those targets around them. Caleb, not only is he the most talented guy, but they're putting guys around him to make him successful. I mean, I don't want to say there's no chance he's going to fail, but it seems like it's going to be a tough spot for Caleb to not be really good in the NFL.
He's just, I think he's smart. I think he's a really talented player. I fear that the teams that are always picking at the top of the draft, the quarterbacks come into the league and get sacked 50 times. I fear there may be some of that in Chicago, but, you know, love what they did. And I love the Odunze pick. I love that, you know, they weren't a disaster as an organization. Is this better than getting picked first or second in most years? So let's see what he does with it. Meanwhile, Adam Schefter says that Justin Fields, the old guy in Chicago, has been impressive. Russell Wilson dealing with a calf injury in Pittsburgh. Punch it.
When Russell Wilson's not out there practicing because he's got a calf injury, Justin Fields is out there taking the reps and having the opportunity to impress the organization and the coaching staff. And from my understanding, that's exactly what he's done. He stepped in there and basically shown this organization the type of player he can be at quarterback.
Fields and Wilson, it's interesting in Pittsburgh. It's kind of this second chance, third chance opportunity for both of those guys. And I like that. And I like that Mike Tomlin is willing to bet that one or both work out for him. But it feels riskier to me than what's going on in Chicago. It feels riskier than what's going on in Denver with Bo Nix. Just because I don't know if we can count on Russell Wilson to be healthy. And I don't know if we can count on Justin Fields at all. So we shall see. Joel Klatt talking about Oregon. He's got the Ducks as his number four team in the nation. I might have him higher than that. Punch it.
Number four, Oregon Ducks. I've said it many times. If I had to buy stock in a young head coach, it would be stock in Dan Lanning. I'm really bullish on Lanning, what he's doing in Eugene. He had an opportunity to leave for some of the biggest jobs and maybe the biggest job in all of college football and didn't. Why? Because he's got the resources and the culture to win at Oregon. And not just like, yeah, win some games. I think Dan Lanning will win a national championship at Oregon. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but I'll tell you what, this team is damn good. They are physical at the line of scrimmage. Of all the teams going into the Big Ten, the new Big Ten teams, so all these West Coast teams, Oregon is going to be the one that all the Big Ten teams are actually surprised with their physical nature. I really believe that. I understand they lost twice to Washington and they couldn't get over the Pennix hurdle. I get that. I really do. But boy, this roster is fantastic. Dylan Gabriel with their offensive coordinator, Will Stein, is a good fit. I think Gabriel is going to be better for Oregon than what he was for Oklahoma.
Dylan Gabriel is the key, isn't he? I mean, he's replacing Bo Nix, who was so steady and so good and so reliable. If Dylan Gabriel can be that, or maybe even a better, in some ways, version of that, is he more dynamic?
I think he's more dynamic, but do they need him to be? I think they're more talented everywhere around him. I think as long as he doesn't make mistakes, the Ducks will be fine in most of their games. Now, he may have to step up and be, you know, great and elite against an Ohio State or a Michigan, something like that, but I think for the most part, as long as he doesn't make mistakes, Oregon's going to win a ton of games. But you may be right. He may be more explosive down the field. So I am interested to see how much more the Ducks take some deep shots down the field. Because Nix, it was mostly, you know, dink and dunk, let the guys make the plays. But they got some guys that can take the top off, and I think Dylan Gabriel can get the ball down the field.
And here's the other thing I'm wondering about. You know, this is a guy who had 12 touchdowns, led his team in touchdowns rushing. Second most nationally among quarterbacks. I'm kind of wondering if, just bear with me, don't get mad at me if you're a Duck fan, it's blasphemy. Are they going to be better in big games? That, like you talk about, the explosion down the field? I don't need to see that against Maryland. I don't need to see that against Purdue. I need to see it against Ohio State. I need to see it in the equivalent of the games against Washington, where Oregon and Bo Nix went 0-3. You know, like, those are the games. And I'm not saying Washington is the game, because Washington's taking a step backwards. But yes, you have to beat Washington. But will Dylan Gabriel be better against Ohio State, attacking a little more with his legs? Like, I think Bo was great. I love Bo Nix. Don't get me wrong. But I'm kind of excited to see what Dylan Gabriel is. And to Joel Klatt's point, Oregon's 3 in the coaches poll. I wrote this morning at johnconzano.com that somebody asked me, what are the expectations for Oregon this season? I said, they have to make the national semifinal. I thought they were the 5th best team in America last year. I had them at number 5, right in there. Okay, I think they were the best team that didn't make the playoff. How about that? So, this year, they're a top 4 team. That's progress. Now, do they need to win a national title, or I'm going to say it's a disappointment? No. That's more of Ohio State's jam. But for Oregon, I'd like to see Oregon get to the playoff, get to the Final Four. The bar's been lowered. You can get into the playoff easier. So don't say making the playoff is the stakes. But, Stephen, for me, I kind of expect Oregon to be in that national semifinal. How about you?
No, I agree. I think it's national semifinal. I think it's okay to have those lofty expectations. So whether that's they win the Big Ten and they get a bye into that second round and then they end up losing, I still think it's a successful season. Or they get in that large bid and they win that first round game if it's at Autzen Stadium and they get to the semifinals, that Final Four there. I think that's a fine season as well. But I think you're right. They got to I think they're past the point of just making the playoffs, especially with a 12-team playoff. I think with the momentum that they have recruiting, the momentum that Dan Lanning's had of staying at Oregon and all the fans have backed him and he's backed Oregon, all that's going away and it has to be, you know, into the semifinals, into the final four teams. I think that's where you are, and the expectations say that. You're number three in the coaches' poll. Like, you should be there. Those are the high expectations you should have. So, yeah, I think you got to get to that second round.
Dylan Gabriel talking about his leadership skills. How did he develop his leadership skills? Punch it.
Yeah, it's got to be natural. It's got to be genuine and authentic. You know, I think in a locker room, it's very easy to see through fabricated energy or someone not being themselves. So I tried to do that. But secondly, how do I demand a lot on the field if, you know, I can't trust or, you know, appreciate one another off the field? And I think, you know, having that approach allowed me to find my voice.
He's different than Bo Nix. I compared, like I told somebody at Media Day that, and I couldn't write this because I think people would take it the wrong way, but Bo Nix felt a little bit Manchurian candidate to me. You know what I mean? Like somebody had told him, this is what you say. This is how you act. This is what you wear. He just kind of had, he was almost so mature that he just came off very perfect in a lot of ways. Dylan Gabriel has got a little more moxie to him. And I sat with him that day in Indianapolis for about 15 to 20 minutes, and he reminded me more, kind of in his demeanor, of Caleb Williams than he did Bo Nix. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just think there's a little more moxie to him. There's a little more creativity, and he was bigger than I thought he would be. Bigger, physically taller. In the Olympics, that 100-meter race, the Olympic final was a heavyweight matchup. Noah Lyles at the wire, literally. Punch it.
There's an Olympic gold medal waiting for somebody. Who wants it the most? Now Thompson starts to wind up. Curley's going with him. This is close. Jamaica's going to do it. Kishane Thompson is a gold medalist on debut.
We thought it was going to take 9.7 to win. Guess what he just ran? 9.78. But it was a lean at the tape by Thompson. Visually, we think he got it. They're working on the photo.
Fred Curley pushed him all the way. Noah Lyles is looking anxiously. It's Noah Lyles! And it had to go to a photo finish to decide it.
Photo finish to decide it. Jerry Seinfeld once upon a time did this bit where he talked about, you know, the winner is the person who leans forward and then the silver medalist leaning forward, but not as much. And then the guy who's like, just like a hundredth of a second back. You don't even know his name because he didn't win it. Noah Lyles. After his win, punch it.
I'm going to be honest. I was shocked. I thought I got out-leaned, truly. And me and Kishane were right next to each other, and I was like, I'm going to have to swallow my pride on this one. I'm going to be honest. And I said, I think you had that one. And then my name came up, and I was like, oh, shoot, I'm incredible.
Oh, shoot, I'm incredible. I love that.
What did you make of the announcer call, you know, saying that Jamaica wins before we actually knew what happened?
Yeah, if you don't know, you shouldn't be saying it. That goes to my, I have this peeve about people who try to tell you the answer to things when they don't know the answer. If you don't know how to get to fill in the blank destination, don't give me directions. If you don't know the answer to a question, don't raise your hand and start trying to pretend like you know it. It happens. I've been in rooms where I know the answer to something and somebody asks a question and I can see somebody who kind of goes, well, you know, here's how it works for the playoff, or here's how, and I kind of listen to them explain it and I'm like, yeah, but it's nuance, more nuance than that. If you don't know who won, why in the world would you say that? I think that's bad broadcasting 101. You?
No, I agree. And, you know, to give him some props, he came out and he said he apologized that it was a bad call by him and he shouldn't have done it. But yeah, I mean, because it makes it seem like you just aren't even paying attention. Now, it was so close. I mean, there's no way to tell.
There's an angle. I don't know if he's watching on a TV monitor or he's at a bad angle. I've watched the men's 100 and, you know, I've seen that event multiple times. But when I was watching it, Usain Bolt was winning it by, you know, a lot.
Yeah, you could tell Usain was winning. I mean, this one is, it was, you couldn't tell. And so, yeah, I think he's just playing on the safe side at that point. But, you know, he went for it and he was wrong. He got up to it.
I don't even need the guy to apologize for it because it's not like he did anything wrong to me. Like, you know, but I just think it's, come on, that's kind of a bad look when you're calling it like that. I've noticed the swimming broadcasters wait. And I could tell they're either watching on a monitor and they're just waiting because they trust the electronics. They don't want to be wrong. You know, when there's a bunch of swimmers about to touch the wall, like, yeah, we all kind of think we know, but what do? You wait for that great graphic that pops up on the screen that says first, second, third. And then everybody else, yeah, they don't matter. You know, somebody's fortune is changing in every event. And really cool, by the way, to see Noah Lyles win because hasn't gone all that well in some of the other events for the United States track and field team. And that was a big win. And by the way, he gets to say he's a world champion. What'd you make of his comment where he said, give me a break. You don't see a bunch of flags that are being waved at an NBA event. Why do they call themselves the world champions? The Olympics are the world championships. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, he caught a lot of backlash. I don't mind. I don't care because technically he is right. Like, in the NBA, it's only teams in America. And then, you know, Toronto up in Canada, it's not the entire world. Now, you say the best players are playing in the NBA, so it is a world event. But, I mean, technically, he's not wrong. Not every country is represented in the NBA Finals. But the team in the NBA that wins the NBA Finals is the best team in the world. So I don't have a problem. It's just a technicality. I just think he was trying to make a name for himself, and he kind of did.
I think he's right. And I think if any NBA player has a problem with it, you know, let's see what happens in the Olympics. And, you know, maybe the United States team will win. Again, we can say that they're world champions. Just say you're NBA champions. Is there anything so bad about being the NBA champion?
There's nothing wrong with it. It's an ego thing, I think, for the NBA.
World champions. Not really. There's not a world
league. He didn't play the best team over in Spain.
Coming up next, we're going to Eugene. Fox Sports Eugene's Stephen Woodward will be joining us to talk about his impressions of Oregon's program. You know, have you noticed that there's a bunch of pop-up websites that are popping up going, we're covering the Ducks or we're covering Washington. People are trying to get your clicks, folks. I think it's interesting. It just means there's interest there. So we're going to talk about what's interesting about the Oregon Ducks next.
To the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest. He's living and working in Eugene, Steve Woodward, Fox Sports Eugene. He is at KORE 1050 AM, Fox Sports Eugene. You can also find him at practice and media availability, and I bumped into him in Indianapolis as he was there for Big Ten Conference Media Day. Steve, give me your impressions. What'd you think walking around Lucas Oil Stadium?
It certainly was a much bigger experience than we used to have with the Pac-12. 3 days, lots of scrums, lots of visiting media, and it wasn't just stuck into a ballroom.
Right. Yeah. I also think it just felt, because there was 3 days of it, it felt massive to me, not just the building, but in scale and in scope with 18 teams involved. It just felt so much bigger. Did you catch, as you were there kind of covering Oregon, you're very Oregon-centric with the coverage there at Fox Sports Eugene, but as you're there talking with Oregon and listening to Dan Lanning and listening to Dylan Gabriel, what did you come away talking and thinking about?
how confident not only Dan Lanning is, but the team is, how it seems to be rubbing off. They're not intimidated by this change to the Big Ten. They're not concerned about the travel. They're excited to go on the road to play teams like Michigan. They're definitely not intimidated by the physicality. I think they're a much more confident group, and I think that also helps that you've had a little more continuity for the first time in years with your coordinators. But I just think, as a whole, this is a very confident group going into this season.
Do you have bigger questions about the offensive coordinator, Will Stein, or the defensive coordinator, Tosh Lapoy?
Good question. I think that having Will Stein, even though it's a new quarterback, having him there for his second season helps. I think having Tosh for his second season, third season, also helps. I want to see how the defense responds this year. I want to see if there's a lot more reacting and a lot less thinking. I'm not too worried about the offense with Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore, and there's no quarterback competition there. You know, Dylan knows his role. Dante knows his role. So I think from a continuity standpoint, the offense is going to be fine. I want to see the defense, and I want to see how they react and not think on the field.
They will open at home against Idaho on August 31st. Then it's Boise State at home. It's the Civil War at Research Stadium. At UCLA on September 28th. At home against Michigan State, and then the Ohio State game. Steve, at what point do you think we'll know who this Oregon team is? What game do you look at and go, hey, well, we should know by then who they are?
I think it's the Ohio State game. I think you'll have had enough of a taste of Big Ten competition and having the Civil War in September, which is really weird to get used to. But I think you'll be tested enough that by the time Ohio State comes to town, you're going to know what the trajectory of this team is going to be after that game.
Steve Woodward, Fox Sports Eugene, is with us. Dan Lanning talked to me on Media Day about the fact that he's not satisfied. He's always trying to evolve. He's always trying to grow. I thought about, you know, the fourth down gunslinging gambling mentality that he had in the Washington game. Sort of like the brand of Dan Lanning, and I think there's an area maybe that he could kind of find where that line is for himself. That comes with some age. He's 38 now. But when you think about growth for Dan Lanning as a coach, what do you think about?
I think he's becoming more comfortable. And maybe that's a terrible thing to say for a coach who doesn't want to be shown as comfortable. But I think he's settling into Eugene a little bit more. He's certainly become more confident in his own skin, and as he grows this program. I mean, honestly, Dan is becoming the kind of guy where, you know, he's going to say, I'm going to knock you out. Then he knocks you out. And then while you're passed out on the ground, he's going to pick you up and take a selfie with you while you're passed out.
I love it. Dylan Gabriel at quarterback. Is it fair to Dylan Gabriel that we compare him to Bo Nix, or does that come with the position, or what do you expect?
I think because they're both senior transfers or super senior transfers, however you want to put it, I think you're always going to get that comparison. Plus, you have the level of production that he had at Oklahoma, so you have an expectation for him to live up to. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. The question is how much is he, how comfortable is he in Will Stein's offense? And that's going to be the key. How comfortable is he with the receivers and with making the line calls? That it's all a matter of just how well has he embraced, how well has he taken on Will Stein's system.
There's going to be more interest. There's bound to be more interest in Oregon as it competes now seemingly for a national title against programs like Ohio State and others in the expanded playoff. And how does that change how you cover the team, maybe how others cover the team? What have you noticed from being on that beat?
There are a lot more pertinent questions that get asked now on the beat of coaches and players. Before, you had a lot of throwaway questions from, you know, fly-by media. When you were talking about the media outlets that have popped up that aren't actually from Oregon or even based here in Eugene that are covering Oregon, that either show up one game a year or one practice a year, that's certainly different. It's interesting to see that part of it evolve. But some of the ones that are here, are digging in a little deeper. You know,
like, give me an example of that. Like, give me an example.
It's not just, you know, about how some guy's going to get used into a scheme. It's how does that person really play a real solid role in the team, not just now and moving forward. You know, a lot of names that come up, you know, during media day. One was Kenyon Sadiq, about, you know, how he's a real difference maker and how, you know, he's going to become, you know, an integral part of Oregon's offense. You know, in fact, some are saying he might even be the tight end version of DeAnthony Thomas. You're getting into deeper levels of questions with individual players and coaches that are relevant and not just, hey, what color does he like?
Steve Woodward, Fox Sports Eugene, is with us. Outside of the Ohio State game, Washington's going to get talked about because Dan Lanning is 0-3 against him, three of his five losses as a head coach coming to the Huskies. Is that the second most important game of the season in your mind, or is it just a game he has to win and, gosh, beating Ohio State, beating Michigan, those are more important?
The fan base is always going to demand that the Washington game be the most important. This year you can't say that. I'm sorry, it doesn't get any bigger than Ohio State coming into Autzen. But yeah, your second most important game of the year is the Huskies. I don't care how many starters they've lost. You've got a good coach in Jed Fish taking over that program, and he's going to get them improved. And it's going to be the last game of the year, the rivalry game, where, you know, used to be the Civil War. And I think it's going to become not necessarily Civil War-like, but for a lot of the fan base, that Washington game means a heck of a lot more than the Michigan game.
Steve, this season, I have said, expectation-wise, this program needs to get to the national semifinal. They need to be in the Final Four. You know, if they don't get there, I would be disappointed, or I would say, gosh, I don't know if this is a successful season. Am I being too harsh? Is the bar too high for them?
I don't think so. I agree with you and Steven. I heard your segment earlier on it. I think that in this case, they not only have to get to the playoff, but they've got to win a game. They've got to get to the national semifinal. I think last year, had we had the 12-team playoff, Oregon would have been favorably set up to make a nice run. And I think we need to see that this year to kind of justify all of the praise that's being heaped on the program.
Steve, I appreciate all you do at Fox Sports Eugene. You're all over this stuff. You cover it well. You dedicate that station to being there a lot. Why is that important to you?
Because I'm the only Oregon alum that actually owns a radio station, and it just happens to be a sports station, and it just happens to be in Eugene. So it matters because I've got my degree and the bills to prove it, and I just want to make sure that we do the best job we can for the listeners.
Steve, I appreciate you joining us. Now, on a prior visit, you've talked about some things you saw as a roadie
when you were working
the roadie circuit. Give us a little insight into the roadie world for, you know, Steven's never. He says he doesn't get out. He stays home. He's like, I don't get out. Tell us what it's like out there.
I have to plead the fifth, John. I'm sorry.
Is it that wild?
I will plead the fifth and just leave it at that. There are some things that I will never be able to talk about.
Who are you protecting here?
I'm protecting friends who still call me friend, and I'd like to keep it that way.
He's loyal. I'll give him that. Steve Woodward, Fox Sports Eugene, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John.
It's almost better that he didn't tell us, Stephen. Now my mind's anywhere, everywhere. What could it be? What could he have seen or done?
That's the thing. Nobody knows, and nobody will know. But I will say this. You got to love it because the loyalty, right? That's the type of friend you want that will go and never give in to peer pressure.
I had conversations like this with like Jerry Tarkanian and his lieutenants, and I got the impression they'd done some bad things. But Steve was worked as a roadie from the rock world. So all around the country, traveling with these bands. I don't know who they were. Van Halen, Guns N' Roses, AC/DC, I don't know. But I know this. That guy's a vault. You can trust that guy with a secret. Leave it here. Get the BFT.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Appreciate everybody who listens to this radio show. Whether you are listening on that powerhouse station, Fox Sports Eugene and Eugene, or whether you're listening on 750 The Game in Portland, or 960 AM in Klamath Falls, or 1490 KSKR in Roseburg, or on the Ace in Southern Oregon, in Medford, where my mother-in-law lives. The Ace Radio, Sports Radio. I appreciate everybody who listens to the show. New affiliate coming on here anytime now in Bend, Oregon. So thank you to the listeners in Bend who were ready to break things if they didn't get this show on their station. No need. Put the Molotov cocktails down. You're getting your radio show. You're getting your BFT in Bend, Oregon. So they're coming on in short order here, I am told. And that's going to be great. And I also appreciate everybody who listens or streams the show from outside the market. Got a lot of listeners around the country who just tune in and stream the show. And I thank you for that. You have choices. I get it. And you are bypassing your local radio stations to choose this one. And if you're listening to the podcast, appreciate you as well. Now, can we settle something that is a matter of debate? Stephen Vaughn, I'm going to raise a question here, and I would love our listeners to weigh in on this. But Dan Lanning, the University of Oregon football coach, joined me in Indianapolis last, when was that? Media day, whenever it was. And he, the days run together for me. Do they run together for you? Steven, do you have that issue where you kind of go like, was it this week or
100%,
last week?
100%, yes. Especially after a weekend. Like, you catch me on a Sunday, I'll have no idea what happened the week before, what day it was.
I think I'm worse than most. but I feel like I don't have a normal job, so I don't have a Monday through Friday. There is no Monday. There is no Friday. There's a lot of Tuesdays and Thursdays, it feels like, for me. But so Dan Lanning comes on this radio program, and the University of Oregon coach joined us, and he talked about, hitting that hole in one. I posted it on Instagram and Twitter today. But he talked about hitting that hole in one that he hit at the par 3 course in Pebble Beach. It's 61 yards. And he's getting some grief for it because he got a hole in one, and it's the course is called the Hay. It's the little par 3 course at Pebble Beach, and so all the holes are like 50 yards, 60 yards. It's a pitch, it's a wedge, and Dan Lanning got some grief from people who said that's technically not a hole in one, even though the Hay gives you a little medallion that says you hit a hole in one on this hole, and he hit it on number 7 at Pebble Beach, 61 yards. And so Dan Lanning, Casey Martin, the golf coach at Oregon, texted on a group text with Dan Lanning and Tiger Woods to ask Tiger if it counts as an ace. Does it count as a hole in one? Now, I happen to think it's a hole in one, but I'm not a diehard golfer. And a lot of diehard golfers out there are saying it's not a hole in one, except Tiger Woods said, hey, my first hole in one was also on a par three that was less than 100 yards. Granted, he was 8 years old when he did it. Still counted as a hole in one. Tiger Woods says it counts. What say you, Stephen Vaughn, and listeners at 503-417-7575? Is it a hole in one for Dan Lanning, or is he still a guy who hasn't hit his first hole in one?
I think that it is. I don't think it is. And I'm not.
You're not counting it.
No, I'm not a hardcore golfer either. But I feel like there's got to be some arbitrary number of like what's more than just like a chip shot. Like, is it 100 yards? I don't know. But it just seems like it shouldn't be counted as a hole in one. And I know maybe I should because Tiger says so. But it really feels like you're grasping at straws. You're just trying to say you got a hole in one. Like, I get it.
Like, wait, you're going to Tiger Woods. You're going to like the foremost authority. No?
Yeah, I am. And I disagree with him. Tiger can't always be right. I just feel like you're just wanting to tell people you got a hole in one. And so you, because it's something cool. Like, I would love to say that. But I feel like it doesn't count.
I kind of think it is a hole-in-one. I think it happens to be a hole-in-one because Tiger Woods says it's a hole-in-one. Can you break the tie for us? 503-417-7575. Does it count as a hole-in-one? I'm going with, hey, I'm not the expert on this stuff. Tiger is. Would he qualify as an expert witness in a trial? Yes. Judge would say, yeah, he's got a bunch of major victories. The guy is, one of the best golfers, if not the best golfer in the history of golf, played at the highest level, changed the game. He is qualified to give testimony in this case. Tiger, is Dan Lanning's hole-in-one at the par three course in Pebble Beach? Does that count as a hole-in-one? I think it is because Tiger says it is, and I'll go further. I also think it is because if it were me that hit that hole-in-one, Stephen, I'd claim it. I'd be out here going, I hit a hole-in-one. Who are you to say I didn't?
I mean, I probably would too, but I deep down I know that it's not a hole in one. This is a par three course. It's not a real course.
Well, I beg to differ. This is not like having, there are par threes all over the place that would count as a hole in one. In fact, the BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament had a 150-yard par three that was worth $25,000. If somebody hits a hole in one on that, is that not a hole in one?
Well, that's a hole in one. But that's a long hole.
What distance do you have to be over 100 yards? What do you have to be?
I think so. I think the arbitrary 100 yards. You got to be over it. I mean, because what? Are we going to say when I got on a putt-putt golf and I get a hole-in-one, is that a hole-in-one? I mean.
Well, I'm just saying, I think it's a hole-in-one. I would love for listeners to break that tie. 503-417-7575. I want to hear from you if you're a golfer. Do you play regularly? Where are my golfers? Where are the BFT listeners who play a little bit of golf? If you happen to be playing that course or your buddy's playing that course, do you count it or does it feel charitable to give Dan Lanning a hole-in-one on a par three that's 61 yards? Is it a chip shot, as Steve on Twitter is saying? That's a chip-in. That's not a hole-in-one. I would argue, like, you know, you're probably using a pitching wedge or a 9-iron, even if it's a little longer. But I'm not the expert golfer. This is not like mini golf with a windmill on the course.
But it's not even a full swing. Full swing at it.
Yeah, but you can't make that the arbitration of whether or not it's a hole in one, a full swing. But let's just let the audience decide it. Scott is in Portland. Scott, what say you? You're a juror here.
Well, I gotta say it's a hole in one. I've had two in my life. One came on an actual golf course, and one did come on a par three. And I did have a hard time claiming that par three one as a hole-in-one, but everyone around me told me it's legit, so it's a hole-in-one.
But did you only claim it because you now have a real one?
No, actually, I had the real one first.
Okay.
But he claims it. Scott in Portland claims it. You're free to cross-examine Scott. He's a juror. How about JD in Vancouver? JD, what say you?
John, how's it going today?
Going well.
Good, man. I play quite a bit of golf. I think it definitely counts as a hole-in-one. If a buddy of mine told me that he hit a hole-in-one on a 320-yard par four, I think that'd be more impressive than a 60-yard par 3, but, man, I've played on full-size courses that have 90-yard par 3s, and, you know, just because it's under 100 yards, I don't think it discredits it at all. One can be more impressive than another, yes, but doesn't make it not a hole-in-one.
Thank you for that. Looks like this jury's leaning heavily towards giving Dan Lanning a hole-in-one.
Coach Vaughn just texted me and said it's a hole-in-one, so maybe I'm wrong.
No, but you're the holdout. You're the holdout.
I don't believe it because it's a chip shot. It's a chip shot.
You could sit here and we could end up with a hung jury because you won't flip your vote. Just depends how stubborn you want to be.
I'm stubborn right now.
The rest of us want to get back to our families, man. We want to get some food and get back to our families.
Never.
And go to lunch. Been sequestered in this trial for the last 4 minutes. Thank you to the listeners who weighed in. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Sports is supposed to be a diversion. It's supposed to be fun, damn it. It's supposed to be fun. Not supposed to feel like the stock market. Not supposed to feel like the economy, inflation, taxes. This is supposed to be your diversion. And so this show works really hard to keep it that way. That's why I asked Steve from Fox Sports Eugene about his life as a roadie, his other life. You know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to get some of these rock and roll people that traveled with him on the show. Just looking into this, who did he travel with? I think he traveled with Van Halen. So you know what we're going to do? Who was the lead guitarist when he was traveling with the band? Was it David Lee Roth? Who was it? We got to find out. Because we want to know what happened when Steve was a roadie.
Get him on the show.
There you go. Yep, David Lee Roth, Van Halen for three stints, including the period in question from 1974 to 1985. Who else did he travel with? Was he with Guns N' Roses too? Why is everybody nodding at me? I think he was with Guns N' Roses. I got to know how many of those guys are still alive before I play this sounder. Are those guys still alive? Because I think those guys they were not living like they wanted to be around forever. They were kind of on a fast burn, Axl Rose and Slash. I don't know how they're holding up, but we got him.
Get him on the show.
Let's get those guys on. Let's get Slash on the show.
According to Google here and their AI, they say, as of today, most of the current members are alive.
Most are still alive.
Didn't give me the exact who's not, but most of them are.
Why did I feel like that might be one of those things? You know, that's kind of a morbid game to play. You know, do you ever go to, like, think about an actor or a celebrity or a musician or an athlete, and you go to be like, oh, what happened to, and then you find out, oh, they died like 5 years ago. You ever have that happen?
Yeah, and especially, you know, now as I'm getting older, you know, I mean, I'm 37 now. It's happening more and more often, too. So it's one of those things where it's like, man, yeah, I didn't realize that person was dead, but they're dead.
It feels like that should be, like, Mark Twain wrote a book, Is He Living or Dead? But there should be, like, and they made it into a play, Is He Dead? But I kind of feel like I think there should be, like, a game that gets played, like a board game. Who's alive or not? Like you all, like we all know Elvis, not alive. But like there are some other people that were like, eh.
Why don't they do like a game show?
Like Marlon Brando. You know, there's some people who wouldn't know.
You do like a bidding, you know, you bid up a system like, oh, I bid $100 and then no, I raise you $200, $300 bet. And then, okay, bet. And then you have to say dead or alive, this guy.
Yeah. Like Richard Simmons died like 3 weeks ago. Okay. So he'd be a good one if people hadn't heard. But, you know, there's a website that is dedicated to people checking to see if someone's alive or dead, okay? And guess who's hot this week on the website? Two people in particular. Shaquille O'Neal is hot this week. People looking to see if Shaq is alive. Why is that? And how would you feel? If you're Shaq, how would you feel going, hey, guess what? You made this website's database for people who are getting searched a lot to see, you know, who's alive and who's dead. Hot this week. Shaq. Do you have someone you want me to check on? Like, Coolio.
He's got to be alive.
He's dead.
No way.
2022. Cardiac arrest.
That's too bad.
Coolio dead at the age of 59. So there's a lot of that going on out there. But that would be a fun game, but I don't think you can play it on the radio because I think you might offend some people. You know what I mean? People would be like, ooh, you know, that radio guy didn't know that you were still alive. He thought you were, you know. But I want to go look at sports figures. There's actually a listing here of people who are alive or dead. Here's one for you. I'm going to throw it at you. Johnny Bench. Alive or dead?
Dead.
Still alive, 76. Thanks, Johnny, if you're listening. That's what I'm talking about. How about Steve Carlton?
Dead.
He's alive. He's 79.
Not very good at this game.
You're really bad at this game. I'll give you an easier one. How about Joe DiMaggio?
Dead.
Okay. Died 25 years ago. So you got one. Tom Glavin.
Alive.
Correct. Reggie Jackson.
He's alive.
You knew that because you heard from him recently. Right? He's doing interviews just a few weeks ago. Yep. I'm going to make it harder on you. Sandy Koufax.
Dead.
He's alive. He's 88.
Nah.
You tend to take guys in their 80s and you kill them in this game. You know, like your trend is anybody who's that old.
Well, it's like,
dead.
Yeah, dead. I mean, it's how old are you? You know, how old do you want to live to? How old are you supposed to be when you live? You know,
I'm going to give you two more. Nolan Ryan and Mike Schmidt.
Both alive.
Both alive. Good. All right. So good. This game could be really good as like a table game. That, you know, playing around the table.
A board game.
Board game. But you'd have to update it constantly.
That's the problem. Yeah.
You'd have to play on your phone, which kind of defeats the purpose. All right. Let's do it. We got the five at five.
The five. At five. Number one.
What do you got?
Well, the 49ers are actively looking to trade Brandon Ayuk, according to multiple sources. Not dead is the trade, but the 49ers have been trying, but nothing has been agreed to. Ayuk trade talks have heated up recently, as of today, as they enter the second week of training camp, but there is no closer to a deal for the top receiver. But over the weekend, the Browns, Patriots were interested in Brandon Ayuk as well. Today, the Steelers resurfaced as a possible destination as well. Now, Ayuk has been a hold-in since the start of training camp, so he doesn't get fined as he attends meetings but has yet to take part in any practices. But there's a lot of talk on social media after one of the practices last week, and Ayuk went up to John Lynch, gave him a handshake, and then gave a big handshake hug to Kyle Shanahan. Sent a lot of speculation about a possible resolution in that contract dispute, but it looks like they're still actively shopping Brandon Ayuk, and teams are starting to get a little more interested as time gets closer to the NFL season.
Well, maybe that was designed to kind of give the Niners some leverage with some of these trades, right? I always think about it from the inverse perspective. Like, maybe what the Niners told Brandon Ayuk is, if you want to be traded, you got to help us out here by not acting like you're a guy who wants out. Come give us a hug. It's not personal. It's business. They've got to make the numbers work. He's trying to get security. These are two sides that have a different approach and are in very different places. But it looks like this is going to get resolved in a way that works for both sides. It's the Niners, if they do deal him, we'll get some cap room. And Brandon Ayuk will probably be traded to a team that's willing to extend him as part of making this deal. Any members of the Dream Team not alive? The 92 Olympic basketball original Dream Team. Anybody not alive?
They are all still alive, besides Chuck Daly.
Okay. All the players are alive. You're right. Happy birthday today to Patrick Ewing, by the way. He turned 62 today. Moving on.
Number two.
What do you got?
I think it's now's the time to really get excited about college football. As the coaches poll top 25 was released today, the U.S. LBM coaches poll, brand new sponsor for that poll. But number one, Georgia. Number two, Ohio State. Oregon coming in at number three, while Texas and Alabama round out the top five. Some other notables, Utah, they're in at number 13, the top Big 12 team in the top 25. Miami, Mario Cristobal, they're at number 19. Arizona with their new coach, Brent Brennan, at 21. USC, Lincoln Riley, a team that I like, they're at 23. Washington, who was in the national title game a season ago, they just missed out on the top 25. They received a lot of votes, but they were in at number 26. And the Colorado Buffaloes, they received two votes, and there's some drama going around Colorado today, but yeah. I think it's really time to get excited about college football. We're getting up here. It's the same month as college football kicks off.
Two predictions. One, Washington will be ranked when they play the Apple Cup game against Washington State. I think they'll be undefeated and ranked at that point. I think they'll have a nice start to their season and a hard fall later in the season, but I think they're good enough to win some games and get themselves in the top 25. On the Colorado front, you mentioned this. I hope you're not talking about this later, but I'm going to talk about it. Like, former Buffs players telling Athlon Sports that Coach Prime's culture at Colorado includes violence, guns, gambling, a lot of anonymous sources, and a lot of inflammatory stuff that is being thrown around. But it again, we talked about this. Drip, drip, drip goes the faucet. This is not going to stop for Colorado. There's just some bad stuff around Shadur in particular and Coach Prime, and this is not a disciplined, button-down operation, but he made a lot of enemies, too, last year.
And there's some reports coming out that during camp, Lil Wayne was performing, and Coach Prime forced everyone to go to the concert because Shadur was opening for him. And he wanted to make sure that everyone watched Shadur rap. Some of the unnamed players said that the locker room was basically like Grand Theft Auto. There was gambling and guns and women just everywhere around the locker room. Like, guys were getting changed, getting out of the shower. There's just women in there as they're trying to get dressed, and people would leave the locker room to get changed. So it's one of those things where you don't know if you believe it all because these are the guys that left the program. And now there's a lot of new guys in the program, but it seems like there's a lot of smoke to the fire there. And it's hard to see that Colorado and Deion Sanders is going to be there for a long time.
It's a drip, drip, drip of the faucet. And North Dakota State looking for an upset in week one. Keep an eye on them as a sleeper. George Foreman, alive or dead?
He is alive.
You're correct. He's 75 and very much alive.
Number three.
Well, Jim Harbaugh spoke today because the Michigan drama from last season with Connor Stallions came out as the draft was attained by ESPN, showing what kind of they know in the NCAA investigation report. And Jim Harbaugh was mentioned in it. He was one of the seven members from that program accused of violating NCAA rules in that draft. Harbaugh said today, "I do not apologize. I did not participate, was not aware nor complicit in these said allegations. So it's back to work attacking with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind." Now the draft says Harbaugh could face a show cause restrictions if he does ever decide to come back to college sports. While new head coach Sherrone Moore, he is in the draft as well, saying that he deleted numerous text messages from Connor Stallions after the new news broke about Stallions. To try to prove that he wasn't a part of it. Moore could actually potentially be suspended because of the deletion of text messages and trying to get the investigators off the scent of the trail there. So that drama not going away. And Michigan maybe without their head coach for a certain amount of time this season.
Let's talk about Jim Brown, dead or alive.
He is dead.
Died in 2023 at the age of 87. Moving on.
Number four.
Trailblazers point guard Scoot Henderson. He was number three overall pick in last year's draft. He has joined Clutch Sports, John, and CEO Rich Paul as his representation, according to Woj. Clutch, Rich Paul, they do have a big history of getting smaller guards to join their agency and then get paid. De'Aaron Fox got $163 million. Darius Garland just got under $200 million. Tyrese Maxey got over $200 million. Fred VanVleet got a big three-year, $128 million contract. Colin Sexton, 4 years, $70.9 million. Does that mean that Clutch Sports thinks Scoot Henderson is going to be good and get one of these contracts? Or does that just mean Scoot Henderson is going to be very overpaid for a mid player?
I think it's interesting. I think he'll be overpaid. I think there are a lot of overpaid players in sports. It's not Scoot Henderson's fault if he is overpaid. But I think he's been underwhelming for me.
Is it a big deal that he's going to Clutch, though?
It's not a huge deal. But
with the way that Clutch kind of runs the NBA?
Yeah. It just means he wants to participate in free agency, and maybe the Blazers do too. I don't know. So, but he's been underwhelming for me. I mean, on draft day, he essentially said Scoot to Damian Lillard, right? A couple drafts ago. Since then, it's been, you know, like, I expect a guy who's picked that high in the draft to give you some games where you go, wow, I can see what that's going to turn into. I haven't seen a lot of that from Scoot. How about you?
No, I agree with you. It was underwhelming last season. Didn't make either of the all-rookie teams, which I think was a little bit of a surprise. You told me that going into last season. I would not have believed you. I do have faith in Scoot Henderson that he can figure it out. I don't know. I think the ceiling for me has come down a little bit. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be the elite lead guard that I thought he would be when he was drafted by the Blazers, but I have faith that Scoot can still be a really good player on a good team. So I think he'll be okay. I think he'll figure it out. His work ethic, by all accounts, by everyone that I talk to, is incredible. Like, he is always in the gym working on his game. So, you know, year two as a point guard, as a young point guard, it's not the end of the world that he had a bad year one as a rookie when you're 19, 20 years old. But you really want to see some growth this year and year two. But I think he'll be okay in the end just because of how hard that guy works, man. He's always in the gym working on his game. So I'm excited to see what Scoot does this year. I thought it was a decent, you know, it's a little interesting that Clutch would go out and they, you know, want him to be part of the agency after his down year in year one. Weirdly, maybe that's me as a Blazers fan. It made me think that Scoot may be okay. Like, Clutch sees him and says, okay.
Really? Well, Clutch sees something in him.
Yeah, like, this guy could be a $100 million guy or a $200 million guy, and we see a lot of potential. We're kind of buying low on him. So it made me weirdly think, like, okay, maybe I need to buy more Scoot stock.
Or are we giving Clutch too much credit in that this is still about Clutch getting 5% of the action on his contract?
It could be.
Of course they're going to do it. If they have a chance to rep him, they're going to rep him. Like, I think if he were a bigger name player and I saw that move, and if you weren't telling me it was underwhelming for you as well, like watching him, then I might buy more into it. But this is a big year for him coming up. This is a year where he's got to have some moments where he looks like he's the best player on the court. Not all game, but just have some moments where you go, oh, he might be the best player on the court right now. I didn't have that feeling. He just kind of was there. And I kept hearing Chauncey Billups talk about he needs to play faster. He needs to play slower. I just need to notice him. How about that? Where are we?
We are number five.
Well, let's do it. Of course we are.
Number five.
Well, remember back in January, a statue of Jackie Robinson was cut off at the ankles and then was found days later smoldering in a trash can in a city park in Kansas. Well, that man who cut the statue off, Ricky Aldoretti, he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Although most of the time is related to a burglary that happened a few days after the January statue heist. It does include the statue heist as well. Now, remember, the statue was cut from its base, leaving only the feet behind. Firefighters found burned remnants of the statue 5 days later while responding to a trash can fire at another park about 7 miles away. Aldoretti pleaded guilty to the theft and was sentenced to 18 months in order to pay $41,500 restitution for stealing that statue, but he got most of the time for aggravated burglary that happened on February 1st that carried 13 and a half years in prison. So that was a little different. But Aldoretti said, I let fentanyl take over me and made a lot of poor decisions. I'm not going to deny that. I never meant to hurt anybody. So, but it all turned out good for the statue, as after that statue was stolen, donations came and replaced it, including $100,000 from MLB, Joe Torre, Cy Young Award winner CeCe Sabathia. They're expected to attend the unveiling of the brand new statue. And the bronze cleats that were left behind when the original statue got stolen are now on display at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. So a man gets in prison for a while because of it, but fentanyl took over. But, you know, we're getting the new statue out of it, and it brought a lot of attention to, I think, to Major League Baseball and the Negro Leagues and all that. So kind of a good story, but sad ending there for old Ricky.
Yeah, I want to say all's well that ends well. Is that a way to put it?
Kind of.
But also, shouldn't have happened in the first place. And anytime you have an addiction that's that pervasive, and this wouldn't be the first show to even touch on that, but we all know what's at play there, or at least we think we know. Thank you, Stephen. That was an admirable 5 at 5. You know what my favorite story was?
Let me guess. I think it was the... has to have been the Jim Harbaugh.
I think it was number two, and then you pivoted it into Colorado.
Yes, that's right. Coach's poll.
Yeah, the coach's poll. Because it's easy just to talk about the coach's poll. But you did a good thing there in saying, like, oh, some drama at Colorado, and then it sparked this whole other conversation, and then it had some depth to it, because we can all talk about, oh, the rankings, and the rankings come out, it becomes a talking point, and it's cool. That's what sports radio's for. That's what TV shoulder programming's for. It's what the water cooler's for at work. It's what your drive to practice with your kid is where, hey, did you see the Ducks? They're ranked third in the coaches' poll. That's your neighbors. By the way, my neighbor borrowed a hose from me today. Is that a weird thing to borrow?
Kind of.
Tell me what you would have done. Tell me what you would have done. Okay. All right. So my 21-year-old called me and she said, Dad, do you want to go to lunch? Which I'm automatically like, yes, my kid wants to hang out with me. So I went to lunch with her. I didn't tell her I had already had lunch earlier. I ate a second time. That's how excited I was to hang out with my kid. And so also I was hungry. But I get back from that lunch. She's dropping me off. I'm in the driveway. And I hear my neighbor say, oh, John's home.
Like he's just waiting for you?
It was a lady.
Oh, she's
waiting for you? Yeah, maybe. Maybe she was pretending to be on the phone. I don't know. But that's normally where I dive into the bushes. You know, John's home. But I stood there because I was wanting to be neighborly. And she said, I did a dumb thing. I invited a bunch of kids over. We're putting together the slip and slide on the lawn. And I just realized I don't have a hose. Well, and I could have shrugged and went, that's rough, and walked in, right? That's one move I could have made.
I mean, you could have, but that, I mean, you would have ruined all the kids' days.
I know. She made it about the kids.
Even I couldn't have done that. Like, I don't care about kids, but I couldn't be like, no, you can't have my hose.
And I just happened to have a hose that was handy on the other side of the fence. And I thought, okay, this is the one time where I'm going to be neighborly. I'm not going to be a curmudgeon. So I said, yeah, I think I have something over here. And I opened the gate, grabbed the hose.
Well, we've all had that situation where you see the neighbor, you see someone, you like try to avoid eye contact. Don't talk to me right now.
Or just drive right into the garage, close the garage.
Usually you get that at like a Target or something like that. You go in the store, you're like, oh, I see someone that I know. I am going to walk the complete other way.
You know who did that to me at Big Ten Media Day?
No, who did that?
Jed Fish did that to me.
You were the one that gave him, you know, the spotlight the first time, too.
I saw him see me, and then I kind of fully looked up, and he looked away. And then I went, really?
So you made eye contact.
And then he smiled, and I talked to his media relations guy, Jeff Bechtold at Washington, about getting him on the show, because I didn't have room for him on that day when Oregon was there. But... because we had interviewed Pat Chun, we had interviewed Dylan Gabriel, we had interviewed Jeffrey Bassa, we had interviewed Dan Lanning. I had nothing left. And so I said, okay, we're going to get him on. But I kind of think Jed Fish was trying to ignore me, kind of shine me like I was the neighbor asking for the hose. Just saying. We go to Pullman, Washington next, where Greg Woods, he covers Washington State. We'll take the temperature there.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We talked about the Ducks earlier in the show. We're going to talk about Washington State in this segment. Well, who do we get on to talk about it? We get the foremost authority on Washington State. Greg Woods is his name. He covers Washington State for the Spokesman Review. Does a great job. He's also in the process of moving. I hate moving. You hate moving. The only thing I hate more than moving is when someone who's moving calls me and says, can you help me? I got moving stories. We'll tell moving stories coming up, but Greg Woods is in the middle of a move. What's that like? Remind me.
Well, it's over now, which is the great news. It actually worked out this morning. The practice got pushed back a few hours because of the weather, which gave me time to get all of the last few things I had in my old place and get that moved over. So it was a process. I'm wiped out, but it's just the way it goes.
Did you do it all yourself? Did you hire a company? Did you hire friends?
No,
what'd you do?
It was all me. I had my roommate help me move a table that someone bought off me. But besides that, yeah, it was all me.
All right. How long had it been since you last moved?
Last summer when I moved up to Pullman for this current job.
Well, it couldn't be that bad then. How much stuff did you accumulate in like 1 year?
Well, it was more just like I had a lot of like the furniture. Like I had a huge table and a couch and I don't know. Maybe I just have a lot of stuff going on. I don't know. Yeah.
What I realized when I moved, Greg, is that I am moving stuff that I haven't even opened. There's boxes and I don't even know what's in it. And that's where I need to draw the line. I need to start throwing some things away. Are you good at throwing things away or are you bad at that?
No. I might be the worst at that at all. I mean, there's two boxes in.
I think we lost Greg Woods as I asked him about throwing things away. Let's get him back on. We'll put him on hold. Steven, are you good at that? Are you good at throwing things away? I haven't even got to talk about Washington State yet. I can hear the listeners going, get to the football. I need my diversion. Have you seen the stock market today?
I'm not great at throwing things away. I'm okay. I'm getting better at it. You know, Coach Vaughn she's great at it. Like, she just wants me to get rid of everything. But I've gotten better, I will say. I'm still not great, but my kids are bad at it, too. So they've definitely got it for my genes.
Anna's terrible at it. And I don't think she would mind me saying that. She doesn't throw things away. I am happy to part with things.
Is it because she thinks they're valuable or they just have, like, sentimental value?
I don't know what it's about, but she recognizes it. The other day, okay, we came home on Saturday, and there was just a pile of stuff in the garage, and I looked at it, and I went, I wonder if there's anything in that pile that I would actually want. And I started to take things off the pile, and I realized by the time I got to the end of the pile, there was one jacket in there that belonged to my kid, and everything else was going to Goodwill. And I did it, and I looked at her, and nothing was said. We just shared a nod and a knowing glance. And the work was done. Greg Woods, we got him back. Okay, enough about your apartment, okay? I want to talk about football. Let's talk Washington State. This is a team that is talking about being more physical. Are you seeing that at practice?
Yeah, a little bit. The last few days of practice have been a lot of like inside run, kind of short passes, screen passes type of stuff. So I don't want to draw too many, conclusions from the first, 5 days of fall camp practice, but I think so far, at least there's a very much concerted effort toward, establishing the physicality and, a few new bodies up on the offensive line. So, and a new O-line coach too. So I think, I wish I could sit here and tell you how it'll pan out, but I mean, what's for sure is that they're definitely making an effort.
They were fun in spring ball, and I watched their spring game, and I thought, gosh, there's a program that's not taking itself too seriously, that realizes that this is supposed to be a fun thing, and Jake Dickert talked about that, it being fun. Is that continued into fall camp?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's been hot, so there's not a whole lot of laughing and smiles going on, but I think so. They always do this. I mean, this is true of the last couple of years too, but they do this tradition after fall camp and spring now where they give these guys, they give three guys the Juice Man Awards, which comes with like a high C juice pack, but it really just kind of represents like, hey, this guy really brought the juice and he's energetic and whatnot. And, we need more of that. So, and that's been going on for a while. So that's not new this year, but, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, between, quarterback competition and four running backs trying to get that job. And I think so far the fun is just more in, just how open of a competition it is on a lot of spots.
Let's talk about that quarterback competition. You've got, is it Zevi Eckhaus? Is that right? Zevi?
Zevi.
Zevi. Okay, sorry. Zevi Eckhaus, and you got McTeer. John Mateer. And who's going to start? Who has the inside track?
I mean, if I had to tell you, like, if they had to play tomorrow, I would say Mateer, just because he has, I mean, he was a backup for the last two seasons, and he just kind of knows the offense a little better, a little more athletic, I would say. But I don't, I mean, I think he will end up winning the job, but I don't think it's like too, I'm not just saying it's just, you know, because this is what they're saying. I don't think it's too far of, too big of a gap. I think Eckhouse has done a lot of good things. He has speed, you know, get that kind of, you know, escapability that they're looking for in their offense. So, and he's played a lot of football too. He was playing at Bryant, which is an FCS school up in the Northeast. So he's played a good share of football too. So I think he has that going for him. But yeah, like I said, if they had a game tomorrow, I would expect Mateer to be out there.
We're talking to Greg Woods. Spokesman Review covers Washington State football. The Apple Cup looms, and it's a game where ticket sales have not been robust, but it's a game I think Washington State can win if they play really well, and I like where it falls in the season, given that Washington has had a coaching change. Will Washington State fans get up for that game? I have no doubt the Cougars will be fired up, but will the fans buy tickets as that game approaches?
I think so. I think they're right now, they're, at least from what I've seen just from the fans, there's a lot of like, you know, we don't want to deal with, you know, University of Washington because of the way they, you know, treated us last summer, which, you know, I totally get. And it's coming from the right, you know, a good, you know, I get what they're saying. So there's a lot of that. But I do think, and kind of like you said, the ticket prices are a little fans are not really sure what to make of that. They're a little pricey. But I do think, I think in the end, there will be a sense of like, we're going to play Washington about a year after they, you know, did us in and, you know, left the Pac-12. And so I think there will be a sense of like, hey, you know, and it will be a more competitive game, I think. I mean, last year's game was awesome, but I think the Cougars had a much better chance of winning this game than last year. So I think once the, you know, the game week rolls around and the kind of, you know, it kind of sets in that the game's coming up, I think the fans will turn out. There's just a little bit of residual kind of angst toward UW, just, you know, for the way last summer went out.
We're talking to Greg Woods of the Spokesman Review. He is in Spokane, but he is covering Washington State football. I want to ask him about Wayshon Parker. Are you there, Greg? Do we have you back? I think we lost him again. All right, so we lost him again. Let's take a break here, Stephen. We'll try to get him back. I have a couple more questions for him, and then I'll cut him loose. But let's take a break here. We'll have Greg Woods more about Washington State after the break.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
All right, we got Greg Woods back. Third time's a charm. We got him. All right, I want to ask you about Wayshon Parker, running back, who is a freshman. He looked great in the spring game. Greg Woods with the Spokesman Review covers Washington State. Wayshon Parker, how much can Washington State expect to get out of him this year?
I mean, a decent amount. I think he, I mean, he's, you know, squarely in the battle for the starting role. And I think even if he doesn't, you know, become named, you know, running back one, he will still have, you know, lots of opportunities to, you know, get out there and run the ball. He's, I mean, of all the four guys in this competition, which is, you know, DaVinci Twinbaker, Dylan Payne, Mayo Pumavasi, and then Wayshon Parker, of all those four guys, he's definitely the fastest, has this, you know, gear to him that these other three guys don't really have, which is no knock on them. I mean, this guy is, you know, just small, super fast, and can really get up the field. So I think that's definitely his best attribute, and that's, you know, a big reason why he's been able to stand out and, you know, land in this spot as a true freshman, you know, early enrollee, but, you know, the guy's like 17 or 18. So,
right.
So yeah, he's electric, and he's been getting, you know, plenty of carries with the ones and twos. during fall camp. You know, still, you know, 5 days in, but he's right there, and I wouldn't be shocked if they named him the starter.
Yeah, and I keep looking at him. He runs like a 10.9. He's a track guy, runs like a 10.900, and just ran away from everybody in the spring game on a big play. I think it was like a 65-yard touchdown on a little swing pass, and we're just really electric looking and different. And well, Washington State needs to win some games, Greg. I mean, this is a season where a lot of eyeballs, the CW, fan base has some anxiety. Is this an 8-win team? Is this a team that can rattle around the top 25 for several weeks, or maybe compete for that CFP spot?
Yeah, I think they can win plenty of games. I mean, they have. I mean, just looking at their schedule now, I mean, they're at New Mexico. They're home against Hawaii. You know, home against San Jose State. Like, they have plenty of chances to kind of, you know, rack up some wins here. So I would not be shocked if they won, you know, 8 or 9 games. You just don't know. Like, there's just a lot of unknowns when you play teams like that. I mean, even with Oregon State, you know, the one Pac-12 team left over, they lost a million guys, obviously, over the offseason. So I think it's just like a lot of unknowns when you play a bunch of, I mean, the whole, you know, whole conference of your teams. And so, yeah, I mean, I would not be surprised if they kind of got it going and kind of challenged for a top 25 ranking. I do wonder, though, like, we're just in the spot, though, with realignment, where there's never been, like, a conference that got dumped by all but two teams, and then the conference had to, you know, play a bunch right. of, you know, other conferences. So I'm just saying that I wonder if, like, the AP voters or, you know, the playoff committee will, like, somehow subconsciously or consciously start to think like, hey, like, these guys just have the advantage of playing a bunch of group of five teams, if that makes sense. Like, it's just like a thing where it's like,
sure,
maybe it's even subconsciously. I mean, it's kind of the same deal with, like, you know, LeBron not winning MVP 8 times. Like, well, we're kind of tired of this guy and competition and whatnot. So I think, that would be the only worry of mine, even if they won, you know, a bunch of games this year.
Yeah, I think they're going to be compared a lot to Boise State and programs like that, UNLV, who are playing at the top of the Mountain West. And that, in your mind, people are going to go, well, that's a Pac-12 team that's got a lot more funding that's playing against those teams. We're talking to Greg Woods of the Spokesman Review, covers Washington State. The future beyond this year is murky. And recently, reports about the Big 12, some smoke there on social media about the Big 12. Certainly, this is a conference that's waiting to see what happens in the ACC. These games are going to be on the CW, Greg. Will Washington State fans tune into the CW and watch the Cougars this season?
I think so. I think there will be a little bit of apathy, and understandably so. I think they will tune in to some games. I think, for example, WSU at New Mexico in the middle of November, there might be, and, you know, it depends on how the season's going to that point. But I think games like that, you know, at New Mexico, you know, home against Hawaii in the middle of October, I think some games like that, there will be a little bit of apathy where it's like, hey, like, you know, who, you know, these aren't even the best at the Mountain West. So, I think there will be a little bit of that. I think they will tune in to plenty of games. I mean, whether it's, you know, they're playing, you know, the Hawaii game that I just mentioned. I think there'll be more eyeballs on the bigger games, obviously, you know, with they're playing Texas Tech at home in a few weeks, about a month, and then UW after that. And then the schedule kind of dips a little bit after that. You know, they're going to Boise and Fresno, and then after that it's a little less competitive, or at least it would seem so. So I think, like, the bigger games, they, you know, fans will get up for and watch. But the ones where they're, you know, at the likes of New Mexico and home against Hawaii, you know, on the weekend where they, you know, would usually be playing Washington, it's like, well, these aren't really the same teams, and there's also a chance that the season goes sideways too. So you got to think about that.
It looks like the Pac-12 is in contact with the Big 12, ACC, Mountain West, SEC, Big 10, trying to forge a scheduling arrangement or partnership beyond this season, because it's only one season that they have this agreement with the Mountain West. Would Washington State fans want to play those Power Four teams, knowing that, hey, we're not funded in the way they are? Or had they seen enough of the Mountain West at the end of this year to say, we don't need to be playing New Mexico and Hawaii, We'd like to be playing Texas Tech, Houston, Oklahoma State. Go play some teams in the ACC. What's your thought on that?
I think they would be over the moon about playing a bunch of Big 12 teams. I mean, like you said, there's been rumors all this week, and even last summer when this all kind of went down, like, you know, are we going to get an invite to the Big 12? I never like put much, you know, credence into that, and you know, your reporting and, you know, John Bologna's reporting, I've kind of refuted that. So that's kind of the way I always lean to it. But I feel like as far as the scheduling alliance goes, I mean, they should be, you know, on cloud nine about that, because they think of themselves, I mean, they were a Power 5 team for, you know, 100 years. And so I think they see themselves as belonging in that, you know, tier and the caliber of conference. And so I think even if it's just a scheduling agreement for a year, I think that would, you know, at least in their minds kind of puts them back on the track of, hey, we're, you know, on the doorstep of getting back into the big leagues and kind of get back to where, you know, where we belong. And so, yeah, I think they'd be fired up about that. And especially playing, I mean, no disrespect. I mean this, no disrespect to New Mexico and Hawaii and Utah State and, you know, teams like that. But I mean, those aren't the kind of teams that these guys have been used to playing for 100 years. So, yeah, I think they would be just, you know, super jacked about that for sure.
Greg Woods, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for dealing with the technical issue, and congrats on the move. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Sorry about those issues. We'll get on that next time.
All good. All good. Greg Woods, there he is, Spokesman Review. So some smoke last week on social media, mainly caused by one social media account that is just throwing spaghetti against the wall. And that's fine. I mean, it's Twitter. But some real smoke, or maybe a little fire, as John Wilner reported on Friday, that the Pac-12 leadership, Teresa Gold, the commissioner, had been in contact with the ACC, the Big 12, other Power 4 conferences, and the Mountain West Conference about scheduling beyond this season. Because keep in mind, Oregon State, Washington State get 1 year here with the Mountain West under this current deal. It's becoming evident to me that, like, they really don't want to offend the Mountain West Conference, but also ideally don't want to play in the Mountain West Conference. They are trying to escape relegation to the Mountain West. And I don't blame them for that, nor should you. And even if you're a Duck fan who's out there going, they should just accept it, they should just take, you don't understand that accepting that relegation is like a last resort for both of these schools. And it would be a last resort for you if you were in the position of these schools. So that being said, they're trying to respect the Mountain West and say things like, we don't even know if they would have us, while also going, we would love to play better teams. And so there is no invite coming imminently from the Big 12. That door is closed. The ACC has got some drama out there, and I alluded to this earlier in the show. I think it's a better possibility that the Pac-12 schools could end up playing an ACC schedule if Florida State and Clemson somehow end up as not part of the ACC moving forward. They buy or negotiate their way out of that conference, that the ACC will probably turn to their media partner, ESPN, and say, look, what do you want to do here? We're adding Stanford and Cal, obviously. We're doing it this year. We've got SMU in the fold. That helps. It's not like a total loss, but what else do you want to do? And if I'm ESPN, I would love to get San Diego State in the fold, and I would love to potentially get Oregon State and Washington State in the fold, balance the conference a little better, get you that Pacific time zone, add some inventory. But if you're going to get there, it's not going to be like while sitting on your hands. So it's why Teresa Gold, the commissioner of the Pac-12, should be out right now having as many conversations as she can possibly have with as many people that are willing to talk. The Pac-2 schools are in a bad predicament. Here's the conundrum. You've got to win games this season. You've got to increase your brand. You've got to improve. You've got to invest. I have a feeling they are going to do a better job marketing themselves. They're going to be on the CW, but they got to win games. And mind you, they're playing the schedule that some fans are going to turn their nose up at and go, ah, this isn't the greatest schedule in the world. Why are we playing these schools? Well, this is the predicament you're in. You, as they say, in scheduling in all sports, you can only play the team that's in front of you. You can only play the schedule you play. Oregon can only play the schedule it's going to play. Ohio State, same way. Guess what? Washington State, Washington, Oregon, Oregon State, UCLA, they're going to have to all just play who's in front of them. But Oregon State and Washington State have got to win those games. You cannot have embarrassing losses. Can't be losing to New Mexico or Wyoming or Utah State or Hawaii. You got to win those games. You got to beat San Diego State on the road and at home. You got to go to Boise State and be in that game or beat them. If you're, you know, particular, if Oregon State, Washington State will both play them. There's a Fresno State game out there for Washington State. Got to win that game. So I think you've got to win those games, prove that you're better than, because you're funded better than those schools that you're lining up against. So that's the challenge. And then you got to hope for some chaos in the ecosystem. And the ACC would be the best, easiest place to get that chaos. Because I think we all kind of know, like, someday, one day, I think we're going to see, I think we're going to see one day that these programs are going to separate. The top 30, the top 40, the top 50 are going to separate. Kyle Whittingham has called it the line in the sand, and you want to be on the right side of the line in the sand. And so what is Utah doing? They're trying to win a bunch of football games and increase their brand and be best positioned as maybe the best team from the Big 12 should that happen one day. Hey, take us. Well, Oregon State and Washington State have to do the same thing. Fund like you're a Power 5. Win the football games. Invest every dollar that you can afford to invest in football. Put it all back in football. Hire the best coaches. Recruit the best players. Go to the mattresses, spending $20 million, you know, directly paying your players when everybody else is doing it. Oregon State and Washington State have to do it. They have to. Or they will be left behind in a way that is irreparable. And at this point, I think they got a puncher's chance to get back in. We're back tomorrow with another great show.